Welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hull.
And I'm Dorothy. And, you know, this week we watched those couple of videos. One was home prioritizing vulnerability and the other one application security. And, you know, they were pretty impressive. So have you given any thought about how we're going to apply these to our network?
Yeah, so when it comes to the vulnerability side of things, because that's the first one we watched, that was interesting to me because when you think about vulnerabilities, nobody ever talks about, okay, what's really important and what's not. I think what happens in security and when people don't have the necessary training, they jump up and down about all the vulnerabilities,
and
right?
Everything is high priority. They all need to be patched. They'll all need to be. But you know what was really clear about that video, and I was really impressed, is how they explained it. You know, you had a bunch of vulnerabilities, then you have some of them with exploits, and then you have the ones that have actually been exploited. And for me, that made it really clear. Was it the same thing for you?
Yes, and that was really important. I think that's one of the things that I got out of that was going to help me the most in what I do at work, what we do here for Section 9, how we explain things to people. So one of the things, again, we go back to that idea that when there's a vulnerability, everybody wants to jump up and down about that and make it something that it really isn't in terms of how serious something might be.
So then how do you determine that a vulnerability is important to make it high priority versus something that is not really, I mean, it's a vulnerability, but may not be high priority? Can you give us an example of both?
So one example I'll give is extreme. So let's say there's a vulnerability for Macs. We don't have any Macs. So that vulnerability doesn't apply to us. We don't care about the Mac vulnerabilities because we don't have a Mac. So that's one of the things that you have to pay attention to. Just because there's a vulnerability doesn't mean that that vulnerability applies to you. If you don't have that system or that device, who cares? So that's one thing you have to take into consideration. The other thing that you need to take into consideration is, how does that affect your organization? Does it touch a system that's buried inside the network? So for example, if you have something that's way deep inside the network that is covered by a couple of firewalls and VLANs or whatever else in there, different controls you may have, well, it's going to be harder for somebody to attack that system versus one you may have plugged into the internet and all the hackers have access to that machine because it's on the internet. So in that kind of scenario, the one that's buried inside your network is harder to get to versus the one on the internet.
It doesn't make it less important, but I guess when you do risk mitigation, you consider, okay, what is the likely possibility that somebody can get in this deep versus, you know, how quickly they can get to, let's say, to the web one or, you know.
Exactly. And you're bringing up something that I should have said earlier. We're talking about risk assessments here. Mm-hmm. You're taking vulnerabilities that you have within your own organization. And that's important here. You want to look at the vulnerabilities that are within your own organization. That's where your vulnerability scan is going to help you. You do a vulnerability scan, it tells you what vulnerabilities you have within your own organization. Don't look at the ones that other people have or just because they're on a list and say, we have to secure that. Again, if you don't have a Mac, why are you looking at that?
Well, I think the thing that cleared it up for me or made it easier, because for me it was like, well, how do you determine, you know, what risk is more important than others? When I was looking at, they had a column, the blue one was nothing but vulnerabilities. And then there was an orange or, you know, column. And that was the ones, okay, out of all the blue vulnerabilities, this many in orange had exploits. And then there was another column and it was red. And out of all of those were, they had exploits and they were actually exploited. So if I was doing a vulnerability assessment, I would look first at the red column and I would say, how many of these that have been exploited apply to my network? Do I have anything? Do I have any of these in my network that I need to worry about? Because when you're looking at dealing with the vulnerabilities, the red column also takes care of the ones in the orange column as well as the blue column, right? So for me, it would be more about which ones that have been exploited are the most important that affect my network and which ones are the ones that could take my network down and cost me my business. That's how I would be looking at it. Is that how you would be looking at it?
Exactly. That's exactly how you do this. Because again, I think what happens for those people who try to say, okay, I'm part of security, I know what's going on, but they don't really have any training, is that they're making everything high priority.
Right.
And that's a recipe for disaster because you can't have everything high priority.
Nothing ever gets done.
Right. Nothing's going to get done. And we were talking about this the other day. If everything's high priority, how do you get anything done? And then you can't secure all your systems. So you're going to have to figure out ways to deal with that kind of situation. And if you can find a way to prioritize these vulnerabilities that are within your organization, again, they have to be part of your organization. Don't look at somebody else's, look at yours, and then prioritize.
Because so how would you, if you have to make a checklist for somebody saying, okay, here's your checklist for you to prioritize the vulnerabilities, how would you do that?
So I would do exactly what you just said, because they had this chart. The chart had a list of all the vulnerabilities for a given year. And then they had the orange ones, which have are the vulnerabilities that have exploits. And when you look at that, there's a huge blue line with all the vulnerabilities, let's say, for 2016. And then the orange line is tiny because let's say, for example, there's 1,000 exploits out there or 1,000 vulnerabilities. Maybe there's 20 that have exploits. And this is just an example. We don't have the actual numbers from the chart. And then when they showed the red was super tiny. So when you do your vulnerability scanning within your own organization, and then you try to figure out which ones have actual exploits, it's going to be small. And then when you look at the ones that have actually been used by hackers in the wild to attack somebody, that might be even smaller. So then the number of things that you need to worry about is going to be tiny. You know, why worry about the ones that have no exploit? Because there's no way for any hacker to actually use that versus the ones that are being used in an actual attack. Those are really important.
So can you mitigate some of those vulnerabilities by how you configure your network you can do it with patching, but what about the network configuration? Does that play a part in it?
Yeah. So now you're beginning to look at the bigger picture, and this is where it gets really interesting. And this is where you get the most out of your security best practices. You're trying to find ways to make it more difficult for the hackers to get in. So for example, if there is no patch, or if you're unable to patch, or you don't know that there's something there because you haven't done your vulnerability scanning, having that more secure configuration using things like the CIS benchmarks to have secure configurations for server, 2012, Windows 10, Windows 7, a Linux machine, that's going to make it harder for the hackers to get in. Now, for some of these vulnerabilities, they're going to be associated with a service. So it may be a vulnerability against Apache, Nginx, IIS, SSH. So in that case, it may be more difficult to try to come up with a secure configuration for that because it may be a vulnerability that bypasses a lot of the security that you may apply to that particular system. So those are things you have to be aware of. But for me, I've always known that, or I've had this idea that if you can plan ahead and prioritize the things you have to do in IT, because IT has millions of things that you have to do, well, how do you get those million things done in an orderly fashion? Prioritize, figure out what's really important, get those things done first. Well, how do you do that in security when everybody is panicking and they're saying, oh, hey, we're vulnerable, the hackers can get in, got to patch, got to do this, got to do that. Well, no, slow down. You have maybe 100 vulnerabilities on your network. Let's just use that as an example. A small subset has exploits. A smaller subset are being used in the wild. That's a great way to prioritize. Get the ones that are being used by hackers. Get the ones that are being that have exploits second. And then the rest, well, you get to them when you can get to them. It may not be all that important to patch all of those things because there's no exploit for that. There's no way for the hacker to use that.
No, but I think, the video really was a revelation for me. Because taking care of the ones that are being exploited at the time also takes care of the ones that have exploits in that area. So you're killing two birds with one stone. But so have you decided how we're going to apply this to our network?
So this goes to what you do in terms of patching our workstations and what I do when I patch our server side, right? Okay. So I'm not 100% sure how we're going to incorporate that when we go to patch things. Because like we talked about Windows 10, cumulative updates. Well, how do you, you can't say I don't want something and you can't force some new patch in there if it doesn't exist. So I'm a little confused as to how we use it in that sense in terms of how you patch things. I think it applies more to how we do vulnerability scanning. And there's another thing that the guy was talking about on the video. He said that there is the CVSS score, which I'm not 100% sure I understand how that works. But NIST will take a vulnerability and they will apply a score to it. Let's say 10 is really bad. And let's say 1 is, we don't really care. When Heartbleed came out, which is an attack against web servers, and they were able to access, I think it had something to do with OpenSSL. And they were able to get the, you know, information about the SSL encryption. So they can see what's going on with that particular system. They can see the traffic. And then SSL is kind of pointless because now they have a way to decrypt the information. Well, the CVSS score was kind of low. It was informational only. And the way the guy explained it was perfect. He said, yes, the vulnerability was scored low, but when you use the vulnerability in a certain way, you attacked it in a certain way, it allowed you to do what Heartbleed did, which allowed you to gain access to that encrypted information. So when I do a vulnerability scan, that's going to be in the back of my mind. Just because I have informational stuff within my scan doesn't mean there isn't some sort of an issue there. So I can't just gravitate towards the red. I have to take a look at the entire information and say, okay, maybe the low stuff in here needs to be evaluated as well.
Which brings me back to the vulnerabilities with exploits versus the one that are being exploited. If the Heartbleed one, it's low priority, but it's being used in all sorts of different ways and all against all sorts of different businesses, then that should raise the priority for you. Because when you're looking at, okay, is it affecting my network? Is it taking this? Can it read my encryption? Then at that time, regardless of how NIST may be able to rate it, because it's not affecting them. It's just, you know, I don't really know how they come up with a score. But I think on any vulnerability that we look at, especially the ones that are being exploited currently, we have to, like I said before, look at, is it going to affect our network? Is this something that they can exploit? Because if they're exploiting X, Y, and Z company, and we have the same vulnerability, it's only a matter of time before we get it, you know, before we get that exploited. So, you know, it's one of those things that you cannot really put the security on your network on somebody else's hands. You can take a look at what they have out there, but at the end of the day, you're responsible for your own network. And it would be irresponsible for somebody to say, well, NIST says it was low priority. Okay, use your brain. Part of the reason why you get a CVE is because then you can look at it and then you can determine, yeah, you know, it is a vulnerability. You know, how does this rate in my network?
Exactly. And so one of the things I want to do with our OpenVAS scanner is find out, how does OpenVAS rate these things? Why is something red? Why is something, you know, informational or log information only? Like, it's not high priority. Where do they get that information? How are they rating these things? And if they're using the NIST score, then I have to be a bit careful about that, which is what you're trying to say about some of these things, is that if NIST gives it a score that's low and my vulnerability scanner says, oh, I'm using the NIST score, this is low, well, I need to double check that. Don't rely on the CVSS. Don't make that assumption that just because it's low in the scanner, that it's low for your organization. Maybe this is going to be a bigger deal like Heartbleed, where it's low in the scanner because CVSS scores are low, yet it's being used in actual attacks.
I mean, I would really love to see a security expert go to their boss and goes, well, I didn't do anything about it because NIST said that it was low priority. Then why did they hire you? Part of the reason why they hire you is to be able to look at the information that you get in, you know, in these security tools and be able to determine whether it needs to be applied, whether in this particular case the score needs to be higher and you need to deal with that. Otherwise, you know, they would just go ahead and they would read the CVEs and the NIST score and they would do it themselves, you know.
Yeah, and I want to go back to some of the things that you were asking about in terms of how do we use this information in the real world. We're talking about our OpenVAS scanner and vulnerability scanning. I think that that's where it makes the most sense to me. Where I have an issue is, okay, I want to patch a system. If I have something like a Cisco switch, that might be a situation that I can understand about, okay, when do I patch that? Do I need to patch that? Because you have to manually apply the next update to that particular device. When it comes to something like Windows 10, they're cumulative updates. So you don't really have control over that. And then when we look at something like, let's say, Server 2012, Server 2016, I'm not entirely sure how 2016 gets its updates. So you may have more control over updates on the Windows server side of things, but I don't know. I haven't looked into that. So how do you manage all of that? How do you decide what gets updated and how you manage those updates? I'm not entirely sure. And then when it comes to Linux, when I patch our cloud servers, how does that work? How do I determine what these patches are really doing to the system and prioritizing that? I think for me, it's going to be a thing of, okay, we do our vulnerability scan and we see where's the red, what kind of CVEs do we have? Do I need a patch today? I think that's where for us, since we patch at the end of the month, do I see, since I'm doing weekly scans, do I see something in here that is going to require me to patch early?
Right.
I think that that's, right now, that's what I'm thinking.
Well, like the guy was saying, you can't get all your systems patched in 1 week because things like that are going to come up. You know, we do our monthly patching, however we do things. And then, like you said, if you're looking at your vulnerability scanner and it's telling you, uh-oh, you need to patch this earlier because it, you know, it's going to affect a critical part of your network, then you can't just sit in there and say, yeah, I'm patched every month. You're going to have, I don't know how to say it, a dynamic schedule for that kind of thing to allow for the security to be applied in a proper way.
And one of the things that you may not be aware of, but a lot of organizations, that, you know, and what he was talking about there with that weekly patching, nobody does weekly patching because it's too much work. And there's too many chances where you apply a patch, you're not ready for that, and it breaks something. Because some organizations will have a plan in their patching to do some testing. Let's test the patch before we apply it to the whole organization. And that's time consuming. So one of the things that some security people are worried about is that in the time it takes you to roll out a patch, the hackers are already getting in. And then there's a balancing act there of saying, okay, I can't just rush this patch out there for fear that I may break something. And yet I don't want the hackers to get in. So I'm giving them that window of opportunity. And that's a constant battle. In our case here for Section 9, we're kind of small. We don't have a lot going on. And so I think in our case, it's a little bit easier to deal with when you have, you know, 1,000 workstations, when you have hundreds of servers, and you have a combination of Windows, Linux, and who knows what else, and then you have network equipment that has to be updated. That's a lot. And how do you manage all of that? I think that this particular method of looking at the exploit or the vulnerabilities that have exploits being used by attackers now is a perfect example of how you can manage these things a little bit better and not rely on things like the CVSS score or try to do everything all at once because you think, oh, it's all important.
Well, at the end of the day, it all kind of comes down to prioritizing it in a way that's going to make your network secure. It's the only thing that I can think of because there are too many variables. You know, you can't put them in a box. You can't just say, okay, you know, I'm just going to do this and this is it because certain parts of a network may have different needs, even based on that vulnerability scanner. So, you know, I think getting a good checklist for us to prioritize how we need to do the security of our network is going to teach us a lot about how vulnerable we are. And also, if we really can come up with a plan that works for us to have mitigate those risks and make them minimal. Because you can be 100% secure. Nobody can. So, you know, you kind of have to sit in there and realize, okay, these are the risks that I could survive, and these are the ones that are not survivable or whatever, that they can break your network. So,
yeah, and this is something that we're going to have to sort of absorb this as we go in terms of how does this apply to us? What does it mean in terms of your patching our workstations? What does it mean in terms of me patching our servers? Again, I'm not 100% sure. The only real thing that I can say is that it helps on the vulnerability scanning side of things to help prioritize some stuff. But again, it's not 100% clear to me how we're going to do that.
So what did you think of the application security video?
So I think the application security video was really good. I think it kind of ties into some of these vulnerability issues we're having and how we patch those and how we fix those. And the other thing that I thought was really cool and why I wanted you to see it is because it gives you a way to see what we talk about in terms of vulnerabilities and what they can actually do in terms of damaging your systems and allowing the hackers to get in. And then also with our projects, we're trying to do vulnerability scanning. We're trying to learn how to use these hacker tools. And we're trying to see how do the hackers get in? How do they access information they shouldn't have access to? How do they get into these systems? And I think it's, even for me, even though I've seen some of this before, it's always a nice reminder to see examples of how this works. And the guy in the video did a really good job of showing how these vulnerabilities work.
For me, it was more, I think it brought pen testing into the light. You know, I kind of wanted to do this pen testing box with my Raspberry Pi. And, you know, I'm going along with my project and I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm going to use it in our network to see if we can penetrate the network or whatever. But what it did for me, looking at those examples that he was showing, it's exactly what I needed. I needed to know how the hackers got in and see it in real time. Oh, okay, I see. This is what they can do to get in. So when I'm sitting in there facing to protect my network or doing a pen test and say, you know, this is what I'm looking for, I would have a real clear picture of, okay, I know how you get in. So now let's see what I can do to prevent you getting in, or if you do get in, to prevent you from taking my information out somehow. So, you know, that for me was really crucial.
Yeah, and so what they were focusing on in the video was web-based application security.
Mm-hmm.
And they were referring to the OWASP top 10. And so some of the things that the top 10 has, and the, you know, you can go to the website and take a look at that. Most of these things, I think for me, are going to be more on the programmer side of things when we talk about application security. And so not a whole lot I can do with the application because it's already written. And I can, though, on the security side of things, try to introduce maybe controls to help mitigate any damage there. But for the most part, when we talk about web-based applications, we're talking about like Amazon or iTop, Facebook.
Your bank account. Mm-hmm.
So these are applications that, you know, when it comes to security, it really belongs in the hands of your programmers. The developers have to make sure that these are done right.
Yeah, but you know, if you go into sites that are managed correctly, you know, they manage your account and your password correctly, you know, then you're going to have a better chance to survive something like that versus those sites that he was showing us to where they weren't totally managed in a proper way and they were able to change the code. I didn't realize how easy that was. And, you know, I have a little plugin on my Google that whenever I go into one of those, you know, websites and I try to buy something, If they have my password and my username on clear text, it gives me this little red X, you know, and it says, no, this is not a good site. And then, you know, I don't do that. And I never really kind of put two and two together until yesterday's video.
Yeah. So some of the things that are on the OWASP top 10 are things like SQL injection, session management, and access control.
This are you going to put the link in there for them to be able
to? Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll put the link in the show notes. But these are just some of the things they were talking about. So, for example, a session is going to be when I log into the system. Does the system manage that session properly? And proper session management means that at some point it's going to time out. And there's no real way for anybody to use your session. So in the example he gave, you go to the website. And by the way, he was using this thing called Matillide, which is from OWASP. And it's a vulnerable web application that you can use to practice and learn how these things
work. You mean anybody can use that?
Right. So it's free. You download it, you install it on your system, and then
can
play around with that.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're going to have to get that to play around with it.
Yeah.
But one of the things he did with the session stuff is he said, okay, I'm going to copy this URL and send it to my buddies because we have this, this was his example. You go to some website where they have information about vacations to Hawaii or something like that. And you copy the URL and send it to your buddies. Well, inside the URL is your session information. So when your buddies click on the link, they're accessing your session. Mm-hmm. And they can use your information within your account on that website to purchase their own vacation, right? They can buy tickets on there. So that's an example of a website that doesn't properly manage sessions. Right. If you're properly managing sessions, that should never happen.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things that he was talking about. And then he used that that Matilla Day and showed examples of SQL injection where he was able to get the admin credentials and log in as the administrator to the website.
And then it actually was interesting because one of the programmers was trying to be really helpful and had a file with all the passwords and usernames of everybody in the company. And he was able to access that because how did he do that? He went in and somebody just left the document on the, how did
right.
that work out?
So on certain web servers, you have to configure it in a way that you can't see the directory structure. And so what somebody did was they took the password file and with all the usernames and passwords and everything, and they stuck it on the web server.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a way for him to access that information. So why are you putting information on the system that shouldn't be there, shouldn't be accessible on the web?
Right.
And that goes to the secure configuration of the system, which is one of the OWASP top 10 issues they have with web applications, is that the systems are not secure. They're not designed to be that way. And that's something that system administrators have to do as well as programmers. So there's a lot of things that were really cool about the OWASP Matilla Day thing, because he did some other stuff with SQL injections and scripts and stuff like that that he was able to inject into the vulnerable web application and pull out all kinds of information, have things pop up, have things automatically pop up, potentially send people to other websites that may have malicious code that you end up downloading and running on your system.
Right. So what does OWASP stand for? Do you know?
I don't know. I haven't looked at that.
Okay, but you're going to put the link on the show notes for people to be able to access it and check them out.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I've seen off and on over the years, and I've just never gone in and figured out what they were all about.
Do they need to have an ISACA account to be able to access the video that we watched?
Yes, they did. Okay. So these two videos that I was that I showed you are part of something I got from ISACA, and you do have to have an account with ISACA. I had to pay for those to get my points for my certs.
For your certs, yeah. But I'm sure that if the top 10 for OWASP, those are online, right?
Yeah, those are online. That's free. You can access that.
And they may have some videos there. We didn't really look at that.
Yeah, and you can look up videos on Matilla Day. They have, tutorials and stuff like that online. And other mm-hmm. people will do their own little video on how to use that. So these are things that are going to be free.
Yeah. And you're going to put the link to Matilla Day as well, correct?
Yeah, we'll have a link to that as well.
Okay.
So that people can see that.
Lessons learned?
So I think, again, it goes back to realizing that some of these vulnerability, that the fact that they scored the vulnerability, I think is new to me. I didn't really realize that. And also to realize that the score is not always totally accurate. It doesn't give you a complete picture of what's really going on. And you have to be careful about those vulnerabilities that show up within your vulnerability scanner as low priority, because they may not be low priority.
And see, this takes me to something Bruce Lee said, knowledge is not power. It's the application of that knowledge that makes it power. You can sit in there and get top high vulnerability on Macs, and you don't have a single Mac. Why would you even, So I do think that as security people, we all have a responsibility to look at the information, but understand how to interpret it and how it applies to some of the things, to our needs for our networks. I think that's the difference between being a good security expert and not.
And that's true. You have to take what you get, your knowledge that you get, the information you gather. And one of the things that I find kind of interesting about all of that is that a lot of people in security don't know how to gather the necessary information. They don't know what tools to use. You know, they don't understand that there's information out there. If they just did a vulnerability scan, that they would be able to gather that information and have a better picture of what's going on with their network. And they don't do that.
Well, and I think it'd be really hard for somebody to say, okay, here's all the vulnerabilities, run, you know, take care of it without having seen, like, this video was very useful. Because like I said, I would have not known how to begin to even put something together to be able to protect the network until I saw those three columns. And it's like, yeah, why am I going to waste my entire time on vulnerabilities that don't have exploits? So here's the list of vulnerabilities, you know. And then the ones with exploits, I would have gone, oh my God, I need to fix these. Not realizing that, okay, all of this, there's a minute amount of them that are being exploited. And those should be our main priority. And the next thing that you need to ask yourself is, okay, which ones are the important ones that are going to affect my network? Which ones are the ones that will apply to me? So, you know, it was a really good video. It was really good information. And I think it's really going to help us kind of come up with that plan to be able to deal with it in our network. Do you have anything else?
No, I think that's it. And I think on the application side of things, you know, we're not programmers. So that's kind of where I think some of that stuff is kind of difficult for us to understand in terms of how that happens. And I think they use the web-based applications, number one, because that's kind of where the attacks are going. There's a lot of web-based applications out there now. A lot of developers like doing it that way because then it doesn't matter what kind of system you have on your desk. It can be Mac, it can be Linux, it can be whatever. And as long as you have a web browser, you can access that. So there's, I think, a migration in terms of attackers going from trying to get into your network to looking for web-based applications. And then, of course, you have other stuff going on as well, but that's one thing to think about. And then the other thing I think for me is having seen that again and watching somebody go through the motions of doing things like a SQL injection or modifying the code somehow and gaining access to different things. That to me kind of leads me into a lot of the other types of things that you can do where you manipulate like Microsoft Office or Chrome or Firefox or an application you have on your desktop. Because that's kind of the same thing. They're figuring out ways to manipulate
you know,
the program.
One of the things that I didn't know, it says, what did the guy say? He says, you need to update your browser. And I was like, I didn't even think that you could do that, you know, do updates on your browser. Because I have a lot of plugins and I'm thinking, okay, so, you know, that's something that I need to do.
Yeah. And so, what you know, one of the things that I think is really important to understand is that when it comes to security, it's okay to realize that you didn't know something like updating the browser. Because you can say, okay, well, I need to update the browser. Well, how often do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
How often do you check to see if your browser is out of date? And even if you know it's there, even if you know there are updates, do you check to see if your browser is up to date? I can tell you right now, I don't always do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have to double check and see if my Chrome browser auto updates itself. I think it does.
See, I was under the impression Firefox, Chrome, everything, they update themselves. I never in a million years did I think that I had to do that. So, you know, that for me was an awakening, you know.
Yeah, and we're going to have to double check that because I think they do auto update themselves, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I check, you know.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that you have to do in security is you have to double check and verify. Just because you think something is a certain way doesn't mean it actually is that way. So anything else?
Yeah, actually, we won't be putting a show next week. Damien has a business trip and we got some things going on. So next Sunday, we're not going to have a show, but we will see you the week after that.
Okay. And we should also say that we're thinking about putting the show on hold.
Well, during the holidays, you know, I think it'd be a good idea. We don't want to put a show for the sake of putting out a show. We want to make sure that we bring quality to you guys and that we are actually able to work on the things that we talk about. So we were thinking about taking a little bit of a break, kind of review the focus of the show, where we want the show to go to, and then come back at the first of a year. So did you want to then stop for now and take the break until the first of a year? Or did you just want to do your business trip and then, you know, regroup on in November?
No, I think we can do one more show and then maybe take November, December off.
Okay.
But we'll think about that.
Okay. Because you got your business trip. That's what I was saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, so. Okay. So I guess I was wrong. We will have a show for you next Sunday. And then after that, we will be taking a break until the first of the year.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.